And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 109, Spotlight on DC Comics, Final Crisis, Part 2. I am Chris Mosby.
I'm Caleb Gerard.
I am Murray Fox.
Hey Chris, what were you saying was the tagline for this series when it came out?
I don't remember it exactly, but it seems like to me it was the day evil won, or the day evil wins. I'll have to look it up again.
I think you're right.
But I remember, what's his name, Didio saying, you know, was the first one to say that. And I think a lot of the ads had made that, and I'm trying to find where it says that.
There you go. The day evil wins, as it was in fact.
Yeah, so... with the current Villains Month, which started this week out, you can see there's a lot, you know, it's very, I'm getting, it's the same vibe that we had before, so.
Only much, 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 much more expensive.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Though, if you look at the tie-ins and stuff, there was a lot of tie-ins, but it's not so bad. And I did note, we're looking at, Issue 4, it takes place right after a tie-in book that they did, Final Crisis Submit. And it's like, if you don't read it, you don't know what the hell's going on. So it's like, it was an in-between issue between 3 and 4, and we can cover that. I think we should anyway. We'll get to that.
Did it a couple times down with the series, so there you go.
Yeah, I know it was hard. If all you did was read Final Crisis, it's hard. It was hard. So to keep up.
Not self-contained.
No, not in the least bit.
Well, I will probably buck this latest try at it because that first issue, we'll see.
Yeah. What? Forever Evil.
No. No reviews at this point.
We will save that for another episode. Let them get some issues out, and because I doubt we'll go through them like we're doing this one. But who knows? We might, because there's some juicy stuff in there. All right, let's get this going. Who wants to start?
Murders.
Sure, I'll totally take us through issue 3.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I could hardly remember where issue 2 left off, but I don't think it matters, because this story is being told in, like, bits and bytes, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you get little scenes here and there, here and there, here and there, so it doesn't be, like, it's not like you need to know exactly where you left off, because doesn't necessarily pick right up from where you left off anyway, but I'm kind of liking that approach actually to the whole series. Like it's you're dropping in, you're seeing scenes, and then they move on. Get in, get out, get it done quick.
No, I'm a huge advocate of these self-contained issues. I think that you're absolutely right that having the other stuff, the previous two issues, you know, freshly in mind is helpful, but hardly, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but hardly a necessity to grasping what is going on here. Knowing the DC Universe is essential.
Yes.
It really is. Like, it's not an easy read, for sure. And when I think, like, back when I first read it, I was not... like, I knew my Kirby stuff to a point. I knew some of the New Gods stuff. But I hadn't read any of the Jimmy Olsen stuff. I hadn't read much of the Forever People stuff. Mm-hmm. I hadn't read a whole lot of Commandy. And now that I have, coming back to Final Crisis, it's a different read. Like, you can really see that Morrison is pulling from... every single, like, he's pulling heavily from Kirby stuff, but he's pulling from every corner of the DCU. So yeah, it's not an easy read, but I'm liking it. I'm I think I'm liking it more right now than I did the first time I read through it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know I am, and I'll be honest with you, I think when I was reading at the time and knowing my absolute distaste for how for it at the time, I'm not remembering having read a lot of this up to this point.
Yeah, it's like it's almost brand new. And I was looking at the Wikipedia article, and apparently Morrison at one time actually explained what order to read these in. And it wasn't even all the tie-ins, but it says here, Final Crisis 1 through 3, then Superman Beyond number 1 through 2, Final Crisis Submit, and then Final Crisis number 4 through 5, then Batman 682 to 683, and finally Final Crisis number 6 through 7.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. Whether we do that or not is another story.
Yeah, because I only ever read the final. Like, I mean, that's all I have. I only have the Final Crisis 7 series, and so far I followed it okay.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever actually seen that, and the fact that he actually said it, and there's a source here.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised, because he liked to
his interview about it on Newsarama, I just found. Yeah, here it is, part one.
You know, I only read one of the tie-in miniseries. I think it was the one with the Question and the Spectre.
I actually got all of them. Hmm. And I think... trying to think of all the tie-ins. The order would have been nice to know, but I think I figured it out after reading it. I really liked the Rogue's Revenge. The Revelation one was really good. I'm trying to think what else. Of course, Legion of Three Worlds. But yeah, I actually read all of them.
Wow.
I'm crazy like that. I did not read the Aftermath ones, though.
No. Well, no, I didn't.
Well, except for maybe Flash Rebirth, and I'm looking at the listing here. They've got the Red Circle stuff. Milestone Forever is listed. Flash Rebirth, Battle for the Cowl, Batman the Return of Bruce Wayne, the Blackest Night stuff, they're calling that Aftermath, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, so let's get through this.
Yeah. Now, issue 3, I had no memory of it at all. Issue 4, I remembered a lot of the scenes and they had stuck with me, but issue 3, it was like, I didn't remember any of this. Okay, so, we open up in somewhere.
It probably doesn't... the J.D. Jones covers?
Awesome!
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got the cover like this. The little strip down the middle cover. So it's
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman wearing like a horned mask, a tusked mask.
Well, that's right.
The alt cover is J.D. Jones as well, but very Alex Ross-ish of Supergirl.
Yeah, it is. Cool.
All right.
It's the belly button of Supergirl.
Yeah.
We got Frankenstein and the Agents of Shade, and they are in wherever they are. It looks like they're outside of maybe the Dark Side Club.
Yeah, maybe? You can see the little Omega thing, and if you look in the background to the left, you see the Statue of Liberty, so they're in New York.
Alrighty. And they are having a tussle with the Question, the Lady Question.
Which I really miss. I didn't realize until I read through this again. They should have kept that.
Yeah.
I love that. Because I read all when they in 52 when she did all her transformation and all that training and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That was good stuff. Anyway.
So she is she's standing over like this dried out husk of a body, and she's saying, what kind of gangland killing leaves a man mummified, and then she runs off into the night. And Frankenstein and the Shade agents want to pick her up. They want to use her for some purpose. They want to put her into a what do they say, the global law, the future of, they want her, they want to use her. They want to use her for, like, the future of global law enforcement. So they're going to track her down, and we get a little scene in SHADE headquarters, and I'm trying to place who the people are.
It's Checkmate, I think.
The guy on the screen is Checkmate?
Yes, he is the Black King.
Okay, see that, I mean, it's not super important, but the Black King from Checkmate is having a conversation with, I figured the guy with the bowler hat was what Father Time looked like at that point.
Yes, according to this, it is, yes.
Well, yeah. Can I take a step back a page?
Yeah.
And the mummified body was the body that Darkseid was initially.
Yes, exactly. It went into Turpin. And she mentioned Danny Turpin, so that's where he's at.
One of those little subtleties that the show not tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. So let me see. While this is all going on, we are seeing that what do they call it? The anti-life equation is being introduced to the world. It's starting to show up on computer screens, and it hasn't quite taken over, but we're starting to see that messages are showing up, no evil, and people are starting to
get that's no evil, K-N-O-W as opposed to
mm-hmm. Yes, exactly,
that's right, yes, you will know the evil. Then we flash to a scene that The question turns into her regular self, Renee Montoya, and she's investigating this superwoman that has crashed into the ground from presumably another multiverse.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, that is... it's not the Red Sun, because she's got a Nazi symbol on there, but it's a alternate version where that Supergirl... is from, you know, another future, which if we read, let's see, that little Wikipedia thing, what does it say about that? That the Superman, now this is, would be, this probably has to do with Superman Beyond somehow, but she's speaking German.
Yeah, and you know what, even if it does have some, I mean, it might definitely have something to do with Superman Beyond, but it doesn't matter if you know that or not. Like, all you need to know is that super beings are being beat up and they're having a tough, like, you know what, like, I mean, they're falling. So,
she's,
and that
Fraulein, it says right here, she, ich bin über Fraulein.
Mm-hmm. Super, yeah, Supergirl.
And so Marie, I apologize for interrupting, just to go back, the thing with the, because I have not read in depth, like, on the fourth world stuff, but did Kirby do that kind of stuff where there would be the no evil and the things we're going to see later on in the story as well?
He, throughout the run of the New Gods, there was this plot where Darkseid felt that there were...
I've heard of anti-life equation before, but...
Yeah, anyway. There were people on Earth that had that anti-life equation... I think inside them, or they could understand it or something. So he was trying to search out the people that would know it, be able to use it, translate it or something. But I mean, they didn't know that they had it in them or that they could understand. So he was searching for those people, I think. And
all right, I just wasn't, I mean, the showing the lettering of it out in the middle of the story like that. I just wasn't certain whether that was a Morrison twist on the fourth world stuff, or if he was simply updating something that Kirby had done.
I think it's a twist on what I think Morrison's twisted what was down there already. Then at the very end of the scene, the SHADE agents come across Renee Montoya and they say, "Yeah, we almost didn't recognize you without your question face. You are coming with us." I know. I think that's the last we see of her in this issue. That might be the last we see of her, actually.
I look, and she actually shows up in issue 4.
Does she? Okay. Yeah. I've forgotten already.
I just read that a little bit ago, so I remembered.
There you go. We get a little scene of...
Well, she gets a whole little mini-series, too.
Yes. We get a little scene with the that disgraced monitor who's been sent to Earth. And he's a big belly burger, but he's not really fitting in, and he's not great at customer relations, so he's... He's, you know, every customer that comes up, he's kind of like giving them their burgers and fries and a little diatribe about weird questions and words and whether they feel the gravitons increasing and all this stuff. And the manager's like, you know what, you just got to sell the fries. So you're fired, buddy. And so off he goes. And he wanders through the streets and we hear... He wanders through the streets and he's watching TV and we see on the TV that Cave Carson has identified one of the cave art pieces that Cave Carson found that dates to the Paleolithic era.
Bless you, sir.
Bless you.
I thought you were laughing at first. I'm like, what's so funny? Anyway,
it's one of the Darkseid symbols. And... these symbols are kind of popping up all over. So Cave Carson's found it way back in the past, and people in England are finding crop circles that are also using that symbol, and the mystery is just getting deeper and deeper. And that's about it for the kid. That's
Metron symbol, right?
Yes. Yeah, the new god symbol is popping up all over the place. Then we touch base with the Flash family, and Jay Garrick is hanging out with Wally's wife and kids and his wife and Barry Allen's wife.
Yeah, exactly, Irish.
They're all hanging out there, and he's telling them, he's just kind of bringing them up to speed. He's like, he's telling and I didn't even plan that, bringing them up to speed.
Nice!
And I have to admit, this part lost me a little bit.
Yeah, it happened at the end of issue 2, but he's trying to explain.
Yeah, he's trying to explain how this bullet that travels back through time. I mean, really the big thing is bullet travels back through time and kills Orion and that's what's happened, but
and they failed to prevent it, and that was that was
Yeah, they were trying to stop it and they were unable to do so, and Jay Garrick, because he's the old guy, he couldn't quite keep up with the other two Flashes, so he went home and he let them know that, Barry Allen is definitely back.
And Chris, which Flash is which? I know that you said the other, you mentioned last time, the belt is the
They're essentially the same, but if you, on the left, the Flash is looking behind him, that's Wally West, hit the belt part of it is not as thick, and it goes to a V in the center. That's Wally.
That's Wally.
Yeah.
That's Wally.
Barry's is just straight, and it's a lot thicker. It matches the arm, the things on the arm, but essentially their costumes are identical.
So that's okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Because I'll be honest with you, I read this issue, and I still didn't know which was which. So.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, at one point Wally had not goggles over his eyes, but his eyes were whited out, I think.
Yes.
But I don't think they used that in this issue. Like, it looks like his mask went back to the human looking I can see your eyeballs mask, which was fine. Yeah. That was a better one. Anyway, and Jay just confirms that it's not a Barry from the past. It's not a Barry from an alternate universe. It's Barry Allen, and he is back, and we don't know why, but he's definitely alive, and Iris is thrilled.
Well, just to fall back a little bit, we're talking about to the German Supergirl. Her name was Overgirl, a Nazi version of Supergirl, possibly from Earth 10. The same character that Nick's Uatan, the Exalt Monitor, was drawing in the previous issue on page 9, which was credence to her multiversal origin. And she, what she had said was, the translation is, no, it's the bleeding heavens. Hell is here. A reference to the bleed, which was that space between the multiverses.
Oh, gotcha.
I thought it was just a reference to the red skies.
Well, yeah, but that, according to this, it says that this, but that could be just, it could be that too.
You know what? I'm going to give Morrison props on that, because the red skies just was such a, was it just a visual cue that, that poop was falling.
Oh, yeah.
Hit them. But that's, he made it actually, he tied it into the Wildstorm thing with the bleed. That's really cool. Okay,
yeah.
Good prop.
Yeah.
And we get a scene with Libra and the Secret Society and their big swampy headquarters.
Yes, the Legion of Doom.
The Legion of Doom, that's right. And Libra is talking to, what's the dude? The Flamer, the...
Human Flame.
The Human Flame.
Flamer, that's a totally different character.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Moving on.
That's just a stupid name.
And he gives the Flamer this new costume, and he puts this helmet on the Human Flame.
It's actually funny.
I'm pretty sure the Flamer's from another book.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure, yeah. But anyway,
that's
good.
Oh, wrong.
Anyway. And the Human Flame's a little uncomfortable about the helmet. He's like, I kind of like my old costume. It's got this retro feel, but Libra slams the helmet on him anyway, and it turns him into a minion of Darkseid. He's like... It brainwashes him. It I don't know, attaches to his brain, and he's suddenly got the anti-life equations zipping through his head, and it's all evil, all the time, all kill, all everything.
You know, something else that just hit me. The villains were calling themselves a secret society in here, just like the, of course, I mean, that's a typical, that's been used over and over again over the years, but it just kind of hit me again, but they're calling themselves a secret society, and there's somebody from outside that brought them together, and then here it is in the villain in Forever Evil, it's the same thing, our secret society.
Even like way back in the 70s when they did the original Secret Society of Supervillains, it was brought together because Darkseid was like the manipulator behind the scenes for the first couple of issues, and here it is again. You've got the Apocalypse connection, and nowadays in Forever Evil you've got, I guess it's the Earth 3 connection, but either way there's always someone behind the scenes pulling the strings of the secret society.
And on the next page,
revealing once again that while he can script pretty darn good, his ideas are starting to become less and less original. So
yeah. Well, I'm sure they... I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. But I've got on the next page, after Lex Luthor shows up, I have a nice Christian Bale with a milk mustache ad, Got Milk ad for Dark Knight coming out in theaters July 18th. So, anyway.
Look at that. Christian Bale wearing a milk mustache.
Yep.
Nothing incongruous with that at all. Anyway, like you said, Lex Luthor comes in, and he has seen what's happened to the Human Flame, how he's turned into this little Darkseid robot, and Libra just tells him, you know, you got a choice. You can join us and put a helmet on your head, or you can pledge your service to the Master of Evil, and either way, you're going to be working for Darkseid. You can work for Darkseid with a helmet and be a zombie, or you can choose to give up your free will and work for Darkseid.
Now, Libra was not originally an agent of Apocalypse back in the day, right?
No.
The old Justice League villain, but I don't think...
Yeah, I remember at the time them talking about Libra. Let me look it up here. Hold on. There's a link.
That's okay. It's not that important. I just want to see if again Morrison was cribbing from
According to this, he was in Justice League of America number 111 and 112 in 1974. In 2004, he made a brief cameo in the JLA Avengers crossover number 4.
He didn't.
Yeah. He picked an obscure villain, according to Grant Morrison, and I quote from the Wikipedia article. The reason I chose them was because Libra came from my favorite ever run of Justice League America, and he's never been used again. He was a character who had stolen all the powers of the Justice League, but then couldn't handle it and ascended to some kind of a screaming godhood, where he became a million transparent body parts and spread across the sky. Oh, wow. Somebody must have been tripping when they wrote that. So I thought I was doing a thing about the new gods. He'd be an interesting guy to bring back because I needed a masked mystery man to start a new recruitment drive for the secret society.
Yeah.
Under the...
He's like around the same time as the Infinite Man, then. Okay.
Yeah. 1974 was his first appearance.
There you go. I think he's like did Steve Englehart write the lead, the Justice League?
Back then? Maybe.
For a little while. I think he might have.
Probably did.
I think he might have. That sounds like a Steve Englehart type of
thing. Oh, and I'd forgotten, in the Secret Files, Final Crisis Secret Files, they did an origin for him.
Gotcha. Alrighty, moving along. We go to Metropolis Hospital, and we're seeing the fallout from the explosion last issue. The Daily Planet exploded. A couple of people are on life support. A couple of people died. Lois is in a big coma. The only thing keeping her alive is Clark Kent's heat vision, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about anatomy or the heart, but really?
Yeah, I know. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
I guess the heart needs to be warm to beat, so there you go. Or it needs radiation to beat. I don't know. I don't know how the heart works.
I have no idea. I'm thinking that's just... For all the complexities of this story, that was kind of a failing.
Yeah, they're just so much in love.
Yeah, I know.
It's like a soul self.
Okay, now here's something interesting. That's in this annotated thing. On page 12, panels 3 through 4, the conversation between Jimmy and Clark is a little confusing due to the events of countdown number 37, which did not happen in my continuity, but where Jimmy knew Clark was Superman and basically blackmailed him into sponsoring Olsen's tryout for the Justice League. But again, Final Crisis seemed to have ignored Countdown, as did most of the DCU. To my knowledge, events of Countdown number 37 weren't referenced anywhere else. Yeah, see, everybody wants to forget about that. What did he call it? 52 done right or something like that.
Jimmy knowing Superman's identity is.
Yeah.
That's a mistake. Just.
Yeah, that's wrong. I know.
Plain and simple. Anyway, Superman's moping around. Jimmy goes out to, he's conveniently sent off the panel.
Yes.
And while Superman is moping and trying to comfort his comatose wife, a mysterious figure, actually a figure that we saw earlier, she was in the shadows watching the disgraced monitor get fired.
Nick Swarton.
Is that who this is?
No, this is, what the hell is her name?
Zillow Bala.
Yes.
Oh, is she, like, she's the monitor chick?
Yes. She's the one that was in love with the guy that got banished. The one with the Kryptonian-looking headdress.
Huh. See, I wouldn't have known that she was supposed to be connected to the monitors in this story. I just...
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know. Anyway, she comes...
That was in, like, the first issue or something. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, but she didn't wear this headdress and... she didn't do anything like this, right? Like...
She wasn't the lover of that guy, but she was the one that was talking to the lover, and she had the headdress on, if I remember correctly.
It's a failure in storytelling.
It is. You don't really have any idea who it is.
I thought they all just kind of looked like monitors, various.
Well, no, see, that was part of the thing. They started out that way, but then they started, as time goes, the series goes on, they get more and more and more separate people. And him getting banished was the start of that, I think.
I guess, but in this story, there's no way you would know that that's a monitor.
Yeah, I know. No, not at this point.
Because, I mean, she doesn't look like a monitor. She looks like one of those Marvel characters, Eternity, or whoever it is that, I don't know.
But yeah, but I had remembered that she kind of had a Kryptonian-like outfit, at least anyway. At least that headdress anyway. But
I'm going to have to go back and look. Yeah, either way, anyway. It doesn't matter if you know who it is or isn't, because really her only role is to be the mysterious stranger that sends Superman out of the miniseries. So she comes and tells him, you know, I know who you are, I know how you can save your wife, but you got to leave the world now before it's too late.
Yes,
and really, that's all her purpose. It doesn't matter if you know who she is.
Yeah.
She's just the device used to get Superman out of the book.
And into one of the weirdest miniseries, two-issue series that I've ever read, Superman Beyond. That was something, wasn't it?
I didn't read it.
I did. It was 3D and everything.
Woo! All right, so once Superman's been...
machine. Anyway, go ahead.
Sorry. Once Superman's been dispatched, we head over to Justice League headquarters. Hal Jordan is in chains. The Alpha Lanterns are taking him away to be judged. And for the killing of... Who did they think he killed?
They think that he killed Orion. Brian and beat the crap out of John. They think he killed
Brian and attacked John Stewart.
Yes.
Right. So they're taking him away, and Wonder Woman's like, no, it's clearly not Green Lantern. It's obviously Apocalypse. And they're like, doesn't matter. We're the police here. We'll look after this.
Yes, we are infallible.
That's right. We can do no wrong. And Hal Jordan says, you know what? Don't worry about it. I can talk to the Guardians. I will plead my case. Don't you worry about me. One more powerful character is ushered out of the book.
Yeah.
Which leaves...
Yeah, even the guy that's doing this annotated thing that we're kind of borrowing from, he even says, it's like, I'm the only thing keeping her heart beating, and he's like, really? Seriously? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's what works when you're in love.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
When you've got, like, a powerful love that crosses time and space, heat vision is the only thing keeping you working.
Okay, all right, then.
Anyway, so the Justice League has been rapidly depowered there. Batman's missing. Superman's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Green Lantern's off in jail. Flash is off running.
Yeah, this is when Alan Scott was part. He was the White King in Checkmate at this time. Yeah. He mentions his Checkmate. He's actually part of it at that point.
Yeah, he just kind
of... Martian Manhunter's dead, too. So.
Yeah, that's right, he is.
I'd forgotten about that, but yes, he is dead at this point. Yeah. Well, of course he is, because we watched him get killed in the first issue.
Yes, we did. There we go. We attended his funeral in number two.
That's right. Okay, so Alan Scott reminds everyone that way back in the 1940s, FDR, Roosevelt there, he had some sort of Article 10. Article 10 was the draft for superheroes, and Alan Scott figures it's about time they brought that back. Evil is all over the place. They need to create an army, and the next couple of pages are all about gathering that army. So they call
it... Was it Article 10 or is it Article X? Just to be snarky.
I said Article X, but it could be Article 10 just as easy.
Oh, I don't know. I guess it could be X if they wanted to pay royalties to the Marvel.
There you go.
I don't know.
I just love that. I love the All-Star Squadron reference. That was nice.
Yeah, that was cool. That was
like
cool.
That's one of the ways that, Morrison is pulling every little bit of the DCU.
Yeah, see, that's one thing him and Johns, when he really tries, is good at, is pulling those things, obscure things that, a lot of people don't even remember.
But anyway. That was Morrison's credo when he took on Batman, is that everything happened.
Yeah, that's right. And he proved that more than once. So
over and over.
Yes. So we get a quick touching base with the heroes in DC. Oracle is brought to the Justice League headquarters. Apparently, she's not a mystery to anyone anymore. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
She was a member of the Justice League for a while.
Yeah, that's right. That's after his run, as a matter of fact.
I think he made her.
He did. He did. He made her a member. She was... That's when Batman hooked her up to everything, or she did herself, actually, if I remember correctly, and yeah.
Gotcha. So where we find Aquaman gets the call. I'd forgotten this was a time when Aquaman was dead, too.
Yes, that's right. Kurt Busiek started that series. It was called Aquaman, Sword of Atlantis or something like that.
It didn't
last very long.
No, I guess it was like a 1 year later thing or something.
Yeah, it was. It was a 1 year later thing.
Either way, the appearance of this Aquaman caused some, I remember reading at the time that it caused some issues because there wasn't supposed to be an Aquaman. There was supposed to be the Aquaman we knew was dead.
Right.
And
I think he got, didn't it end up showing in that series that there was a sorcerer that kept showing up? And it ended up being the Aquaman that we knew. He got all mutated and screwy when he did whatever he did to save Atlantis.
I'm going to go with hey. I have no freaking clue.
Seems like I remember that. But anyway.
That could have been what happened, but it happened way after this series ended.
Oh, well, yeah, because they ended that series and they quickly forgot everything that happened.
Yeah, so we've got this mysterious new Aquaman. We've got Freddie Freeman as Captain Marvel, and he's feeling all gloomy because the Marvel family isn't really anymore. And off he goes. He goes flying off into space. We get a lovely scene with Green Arrow and Black Canary getting ready to...
Yeah, now who wants to go through all these characters here?
Which one? No, we don't need to.
No, it's fine. I'm just kidding. They've already got it all... this guy's got it at... mapped out here.
I don't know that I could go through them all. I know some of them, most of them.
Who's Sasha?
She's in Checkmate. Was in Checkmate and she got infected by a nanite kind of thing.
She was Batman's bodyguard for a little while.
Yes, and she ended up getting into Checkmate. That's right. That was an interesting storyline.
So we get all the current DCU. They're all gathered there.
There's GSA, too.
Yes, everybody. They're going to follow Green Lantern's orders, and they're going to set up watchtowers around the world and try to hold back the press of evil. And while they're doing that, we get a quick scene with... Sonny Sumo and Shiloh Norman, the Mr. Miracle character, they are...
You know, at the time, I thought that whole super young team was kind of silly, but this is actually kind of... It seems a lot cooler now. Anyway.
Yeah. They are getting ready to fly off somewhere to help somebody. But before they can get away, their plane is blown up, and it looks like all is lost when the super young team comes racing up in their super young team's supercar, and they hop into the, what do they call it? They had a name for it.
The Wonder Wagon.
The Wonder Wagon.
He actually calls it the Wonder Wagon.
Yes. That's what it is. They hop into it.
Got Big Atomic Lantern Boy, Shiny Happy Aquazon, Most Excellent Super Bat, Shy, Crazy Lolita Canary, which is the small little chick, and Well-Spoken Sonic Lightning Flash. Yeah, those definitely sound like Japanese names.
I would have liked to see more of them.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Anyway, they go flying off to help the world. And throughout the story, actually, they've talked a little bit about how Bloodhaven has been destroyed, and Bloodhaven has been...
Yeah, it was like toxic deal, I remember.
Yeah, that happened in the Infinite Crisis days, right? Like,
yeah, chemo, it did. Yeah.
The big chemo monster dropped on it and destroyed Bloodhaven and
mm-hmm.
still like a big war zone.
Yeah, I think the Wall did that, as a matter of fact.
Well,
they did it for a reason, but I don't remember what.
They really had a hate on for Dick Grayson, don't they?
Yeah, they still do. Yes, this is Wonder Woman on the outskirts.
I don't,
yeah,
I don't,
it had a
It's just wow. I mean, they go in, they trash his town.
Yeah. Well, Devin Grayson completely. They'd had a whole thing built up for him, and she took over, and you know, had every all that was destroyed, and then of course, well, there was other things she did to him that was even worse. There was. Well, never mind. I'm not going to get into it. I'm just getting pissed off. But yeah.
Either way, mm-hmm. we get Bloodhaven. It's yes. a disaster. But we see Morrison playing around with more DC concepts. So we've got the Atomic Knights,
yeah,
who are now the protectors of Bloodhaven.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mentioned of Command D.
Yes, the Command Outpost D, where they are experimenting with animal-human hybrids and stuff, which all of which is tying into like the Commandy future, and the Atomic Knights were another potential future for the DC universe, and it's neat seeing Morrison play with them all. Anyway, Wonder Woman has gone into Bloodhaven to, I forget what her reason was for going there. I don't know, checking things out. She wants to help. Either way, she does not get to help for long because we get Mary Marvel in her dominatrix outfit. And
yeah.
Mary Marvel has totally drinking the apocalypse juice there. She's full-on Darkseid helper.
Now, is the flesh farm, is that a concept? Is that a Kirby concept? Or again, is that a...
The what? The flesh farm? I think it is. I want to say it's something to do. I think it would have been in like some of the Jimmy Olsen stories.
Okay.
The flesh farm, and there was like another concept that they mentioned. I'm trying to remember what it was. That also came out of the Jimmy Olsen stories, where they were experimenting with clones and different types of DNA stuff. Anyway, here we go. Wonder Woman and Mary Marvel have a big throwdown. They have a big fight. Mary Marvel chops up some of the Atomic Knights. And Wonder Woman's still trying to protect her. She's like, she's not really a killer. You can't blame her. And one of Darkseid's soldiers shoots her with some anti-life venom, I guess, or powder, and mm-hmm. Wonder Woman is infected, and she becomes part of the new Female Furies. She's part of Darkseid's shock troops.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Then we get to see Oracle. She's checking out the internet, and she sees that everyone in the world has just received an email, and inside the email is the anti-life equation virus. And so, before it can get too far, I guess.
Yeah, she shuts the net down.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes into the that Final Crisis submit after that.
Gotcha. Well, turning off the internet, that would be a big deal. But I want to say that maybe she doesn't do it in time, because it sounds like...
No, I think she doesn't.
The world is still pretty messed up. Still pretty messed up.
Let's see, a quick deal of submit. Trapped inside a school, mother and daughter attempt to make contact with anyone not affected by anti-life using their computer. Elsewhere, Black Lightning, on his way to Justice League's Hall of Justice, attempts to escape from possessed dogs by running into a department store. Unknown to him, the villain Tattoo Man and his son are hiding in the same store. The boy wants to help Lightning, despite the fact that his father has always warned his children against the superheroes. As Justifiers capture Lightning, the Tattoo Man and his son attack him, helping the hero escape. the mother and daughter and Tattoo Man's wife and child are, and despite his misgivings about the heroes, he takes Lightning back to their hideout. Their Lightning decides that they should lean for the Justifiers, find them. Let's see, let me go through this. As they argue over whether to leave, the Justifiers arrive, and the Tattoo Man blames Lightning. His wife, however, admits to using the computer. The same signal that Lightning heard and brought him close to them was also picked up by Darkseid slaves. Using the school bus, Lightning and family break out of school, evading the Justifiers for as long as they can before the bus crashes at the end of a tunnel. At the other end are Leaf Chopper soldiers from Shade. Lightning sacrifices himself, buying enough time for Tattoo Man and his family to get to the chopper and to safety. As he reaches Shade, soldiers, Black Lightning is overcome and is taken by the Justifiers, becoming one of them. Tattoo Man escapes. Rather than escape with his family, heads for the Hall of Justice to help the heroes Lightning was heading for. His story continues in Final Crisis number 4.
There we go. And all of that is probably a good story. I don't know that you need it for number 4. Like, in number 4, you get the gist of all that. You get the sense that Black Lightning was doing something and was defeated. And I think you get enough information to know that the Tattooed Man has been rescued. Because, I mean, I think I followed that part okay, and I didn't ever pick up the submit one-shot or mini or whatever it was, so...
Yeah, you could kind of pick up kind of fast, but when I read 4 again, it seemed like it was...
It probably...
somewhat in the middle.
Experience, but...
Yeah.
But there we go. That brings us into number 4. Alrighty. We've got a cover. My cover has got... it's got Green Lantern, actually, on it. And Black Canary and Green Arrow and their...
oh, yeah.
Some of Darkseid's troops.
Looks like somebody's... the Red Tornado is there, too.
Yeah, Vixen is flying up in the air. Got hit by one of those dogs. Yeah, Red Tornado is there.
Tornado's down on the bottom. Yeah.
Other cover is an awesome, again, an awesome J.G. Jones with Darkseid with his fists together with the two, with the Omega symbol on each fist coming together like...
Oh, I think I do remember seeing that one. Yeah. Alright, so number 4, we're getting...
And we, this also should note, this is when J.G. Jones drops the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we start to get other artists in here, so this issue has got...
yeah, I think mostly Carlos Pacheco, right?
Yeah, I don't know how they split up the art duties, but
yeah.
they're both on the... they're both on the book. I don't think it's the best Carlos Pacheco art, but...
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, it's still very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. So we get... let me see. We get different narrators throughout issue 4, I think. And that caused me to sit and think for a while. So we've got the Ray, who is narrating the first chunk of the book. And he is just kind of talking about how the internet's down, and so he's been turned into the communications network for the heroes, because he is fast as light, so he can zip around the world and he can pass along messages because they can't use the internet. It's anyone who is connected through anything, whether it's their GPS or their cell phone or their radio, their TV, anything that's electronic and turned on is broadcasting the anti-life equation, and people are succumbing, falling to it. So the Ray is zipping around and he's passing messages around like
Pony Express.
Well, in the classroom, throwing notes around at light speed.
This this is another one of those things where I always have to give Morrison credit, is that he's like, you know what? We believe a man can fly in a comic book. We believe people can do such and such in comic books. So, you know what? Anything is possible. So don't tell me that character XYZ, who can do all these other things, can't do these things with his light powers, you know? He can do whatever the hell I want him to do. He
turns into exactly.
That's right. He's Super Messenger Boy. So he's delivering newspapers. He is delivering the Tattooed Man to the headquarters, and it's kind of neat seeing Green Arrow, who is normally the liberal bleeding heart, turn into a bit of a reactionary blowhard here as he refuses to give the Tattooed Man any sort of what is it? He's not giving the Tattooed Man any leeway at all. He's like, this guy's a crook. He's a Trojan horse. The bad guys are probably using him. And, however, Tattooed Man very quickly tells him, you know, he's an anti-life survivor, and Black Lightning wanted him to, pass along some messages, and he's like, it's the end of the world, and you still gotta act like you own it. Superheroes.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yes, so, you know, Ollie eventually sees the light and he brings him into the headquarters where we've got the Flash's family, and the kids are all excited at seeing the Ray, and they're wondering if he's seen Flash, and he delivers the newspaper and that's kind of it. They're like, The heroes want to know what's going on around the world, what's happened to the Bloodhaven Strike Force, and he kind of frowns, and then we get this double-page spread of Bloodhaven, and it's been destroyed. We see all the Atomic Knights and their giant dogs lying down. We see the Negative Woman has been...
Yeah, that was interesting. The rest of it's Checkmate stuff. Yeah, Director Bones laying there. Those are Checkmate soldiers, and Count Vertigo was one of the, I think he was the Black Bishop during that time, so that's...
Okay, so he was part of Checkmate, too.
Yeah, he was in Checkmate.
Was Negative Woman part of Checkmate?
Not that I ever saw. I'm not really sure why she's there. That didn't make sense to me. Okay. Or Director Bones, for that matter.
Huh. Well, either way, she's dead.
Yep.
But the narration now turns to Turpin, and I'd forgotten that this was Turpin. I had to remind myself that...
yes, that's correct.
Yeah, it looks like a little scratch pad. That's Dan Turpin talking, and he's trying to tell himself that there's always hope. Never give up. Life's hard, but you've never backed down before. You've never asked for help, but he needs help now because he can't hold the evil back any longer. And while he's saying all this, we're inside the Fear Factory or wherever it is, and various agents of Darkseid are trying to convert him, trying to get him ready to receive Darkseid inside his body there. And I kind of like in these two pages, you get the sense that the gods of the fourth world, they died and been killed off, but they're coming back into this fifth version, and they need new bodies, and they're hoping that Turpin's body is going to be used for Darkseid, but he is trying to fight it as much as he can. Mm-hmm. And I guess the big tiger guy is supposed to be one of the new gods, Kalibak, I guess.
Yeah, that's
turned into a big tiger.
That's Talky Tiny, I think.
Oh, do you think it is?
I think it is. They put him in that body because there was that earlier scene where he was laying there. I thought maybe that's later on. I could be wrong.
Oh no, maybe it is. Like, because we knew Talky Tiny there was.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Yeah. I thought he was captured, but I could be wrong.
It could be that he was, because there can't be that many talking tigers in the DCU, and it would make sense to count that personality.
Great. Jeez. You're killing
well,
me.
Well, he's not talking with his mouth full right now. He's, you know, eating a Green Lantern, but...
Yes.
he's vicious enough. So, yeah. Then we check in on some of the rest of the world there. We're inside the Hall of Justice, and the heroes are realizing that it is bad out there. The new gods have died off. The bad gods have come back, and they are totally out of their depth.
And by the way, it is not Talking Tawny, that this guy who annotated it, who took much more time to analyze the tiger that they were, if we go back and look at issue 2, mm-hmm. they were playing with a tiger's body in issue 2, and that's...
Okay,
well, that's just a... Alright then, I'm totally off base then.
No, it's just one of the, it's a flaw in the storytelling.
I would think so too.
There's a presumption of detail oriented, that we're going to be detail oriented enough to go back and reread each issue as the new ones come out, and that's
true. Now that you mention it, I remember the little scene in issue 2 where we see the commandy character in a prison, and we see other little animals being worked on, but. Yeah, you kind of have to bring a lot to it to make the jump that from 2 to 4 is.
Yep.
And the book is a lot like it does, it makes jumps, it forces you to really think about what's going on sometimes. And in some cases, like for the tiger creature, it wasn't something that I did think a whole lot about, and if I had sat and tried to think about it, then I might have either bent my brain around in circles trying to go, where did this tiger come from, or I might have remembered issue 2, but I didn't. I just figured it was out.
Yeah, and thank God someone did take the time, because
totally.
We didn't.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's thick, though. I mean, come on.
Yep.
It's a dense story for sure. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
I do like this.
We're on page. I guess we're not that far. The big scenes with what happened to everybody on it.
Yeah, well, we're just about there. I mean, the teams, they're touching base with what's going on around the world, and it's. It's not good. It's bad out there. And we see a scene of Hot Girl and Mr. Terrific. They're in some castle in Europe, and they're having a rough time of it. They are being overrun.
That's actually Checkmate Castle.
There you go. That's the Checkmate. Oh, there it is. The Global Peace Agency. So they're being overrun. They're having a rough time. And then we get to see the big scene of all kinds of DC characters, and which ones are missing, and which ones are dead, and which ones are still around. And it's neat. We see John Johns is dead. We see all kinds of people are missing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting to note that only one of them is dead. I mean, given all that's going on, I mean...
Well, they don't know for sure if the other one, the ones that listed MIA, are, you know.
But I mean, given what Morrison could do, he could have easily have said, you know, this minor character is toast. You know, he could have killed off.
Yes.
You know,
oh, that's true, and he didn't. He just had them missing or corrupted or something.
Right.
One little note, something kind of weird. Look at Wonder Woman. She's in the second row down, third over. Look at Wonder Woman's symbol on her. Tiara. It looks like a pentagram.
Wonder Woman has become the defender of...
But according, and the annotation says she should be listed as MIA. As shown, listed it later in the issue, because that's what they show her actually being converted, but... Interesting.
Yeah, I guess, well, maybe at this point they didn't realize she'd been turned into a...
Probably not, no.
Gibbering.
Wait, here's a continuity point. I forgot this was going on in the Justice Society, but that Earth 2 look.
Yeah, it was going on. Yeah, that's the Kingdom Come Superman.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, oh yeah, here we get a small, tiny scene with Miss Montoya, the question. She's chatting with Miss Waller, and they tell her that they brought her here for a reason, for at great expense, but that might be all we see of her. Perhaps that's her lead
I
into
it. I think. I really don't remember.
Yeah, so we see Watchtower 3 is at the Fortress of Solitude, and that's where Supergirl is with the Metal Men.
Oh, you see Blue Beetle over there, too.
Yes. Yep, Blue Beetle and some of the JSA are over there. And Watchtower 5. Yeah, Talking Tom.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's there. We see Watchtower 5 is Superbia, the Ultramarine Corps headquarters. I don't know the Ultramarines at all. I didn't read anything
that
about them.
That was in Morrison's run of GLA.
Thing, yeah. I jumped out long before that.
I read that all the way through till Wade took over, and much off and on all the way through the whole thing.
Gotcha.
Got a lot of the trades.
The issues where there was a new team coming or new team members joining, and then jumped off quickly after. We see Watchtower 4 is in the jungles with Bwana Beast and...
Yeah, Bwana Beast.
And somebody else.
Yeah, I have no idea who that is. Who did they say it is?
Remember, they weren't calling him Bwana Beast at that time.
Were they calling him Freedom Beast?
Freedom Beast.
He's fighting gorillas. And...
Yes, that's right. It says there, Freedom Beast. Yeah.
Does it?
It says in the annotation, Freedom Beast. And Kid Impala and Bushmaster are the other ones.
Okay.
And he says, the last time I looked, they were dead. But here they are again.
Bushmaster a good guy or a bad guy?
I think he's a bad guy.
He might have been like a Suicide Squad character.
Yeah, that's very possible.
Okay.
We get Shazam going to see Black Adam, and he's saying, look, we need your help. And Black Adam is like, we're at our weakest, we're outnumbered, we're doomed. And then he says, that sounds like my kind of battle. And the Great Ten from China, they are ready, they're holding the forces, they're ready. I liked the Great Ten, too. I would have liked to see more of them.
Yeah, that series they started but then canceled before it was over was really good, actually.
Yeah, so I guess not enough of us wanted to see them. But
there's an ad for one of the greatest TV shows, Fringe. And,
yes.
Which I still
watch. Fringe.
It's good stuff.
Let me see. So we've done the tour of the DCU there, and the people in the Hall of Justice, Black Canary, Green Arrow, Ray, and Tattooed Man, they've decided they got to take the fight down to take the fight to the people. And just before they do that, Flash and Wally, Barry and Wally, have like a little chat. And while they're chatting and reconnecting and being all happy to see one another, yeah, the new female Furies come crashing in. So we got Catwoman and Batwoman and Wonder Woman. They're all...
And Catwoman.
Yep. Darkseated out there riding big dogs.
Can I back up for just a moment? Sure. Where Black Canary tells Ray how to use his powers. Yeah, you can turn into a transmitter.
He says later on, well, if I can be a light, I guess I can be a transmitter.
That's kind of... When did she get all sciencey?
I don't know.
I think she used to date the Ray way back when she
might. But remember, she was the leader of the Justice League at that point, so they made her. She was stepped up a notch, I think.
So did in Golden Age or Silver Age did she date or was
she
already?
Might have.
I want to say around the time that the Ray had his own series, and
Really?
Yep, Black Canary appeared in it a couple of times. I want to say maybe, or maybe it was when Black Canary had her series. Maybe they both had a series at the same time.
I don't know.
Either way, one of them appeared in the other's book for a couple of issues.
Didn't that Ray have ties to the Justice League? Like he was like an offspring or something? Seems like it. They might have known each other from there.
I don't remember. I know he was a member of the Justice League at one point, I think. But
oh my god, it was! You're absolutely right. In the Ray series issues, I found it on it. The internet is an amazing resource.
Yes, it is.
Never heard of it before. In the Ray series, it was written by Priest, Chris Priest.
Yep.
Issues 6 through 8. It may have even gone a little bit longer than that. It was a one-night stand, but they didn't hang out.
My goodness.
What a lucky one-night stand. That kid would have been like a teenager, maybe his early 20s.
Good lord, Black Canary. Jeez.
She was a free agent. She's
yeah, that's
free,
true.
She's free to boink whoever she wants.
And there's
she
a...
shoes,
there's
a cranky old bearded...
Cranky yeah, he's way older than her.
A hot young... teenager. Well, who's gonna take the teen?
There's an Easter egg.
Now, did you notice that Catwoman is not wearing a helmet?
You're right.
Yeah, she isn't, is she? Well, actually, I don't think. No, it's that wasn't spread by a helmet. It was a virus kind of thing that Mary Marvel put on her. Remember? They wanted her to be the carrier of it. So yeah, none of them have helmets.
I just noticed that the other female Furies are all wearing helmets.
Well, I would hope that's a Wonder Woman helmet because that's pretty gross.
Yeah, it's that some kind of face mask.
Anyway, they're getting ready to do battle, but the Flashes make short work of them. They have a battle.
I didn't even notice that the first time when I reread this today. I didn't even really notice Giganta in there until that one panel where she's on her hands or knees.
That's right. That's because she's ginormous in that bat.
Yeah, and
that scene there.
They trip her and everything. I just didn't miss that the first time.
Uh-huh. Yes, Wonder Woman tries to kill the Flashes, but they escape. They escape. And inside the watchtower, we've got various... Oh, I just noticed this scene of characters in a genie jar or something.
They say in this thing here, as the heroes and civilians rush through the Hall of Justice trophy room, they pass a bottle which has miniaturized versions of the Justice League trapped inside. I don't know what specific story that this references, but the ball showed up in the Grant Morrison-written Earth 2 one-shot where the antimatter Lex Luthor visited the League's Watchtower and is shown on the left. It's an old Justice League story because I remember seeing it in that run, too. They had just gotten... they had just Oliver's son, Connor. They asked him to join. He ended up being in there all by himself, fighting the key or something like that. And they were showing that stuff. And it seems like I saw a Wizard magazine that had like what's all the stuff in the trophy room. But I forget what the deal was with that.
Either way, it's probably not important. It's just a lovely little egg. Let me see. So, Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, tricks all the rest of the heroes to get into the transporter. Black Canary, of course, wants him to come along with her, but he's gonna hold down the fort in the Hall of Justice while he's sending the rest off to safety. He has a beautiful little moment with Black Canary, and then she's zapped away with Flash's family and the tattooed man. They all go off to safety, and Green Arrow tries his best to hold down the fort at the Hall of Justice, and he does what he can, but a anti-life Black Lightning takes him out, and they force a helmet onto him, and before you know it, Green Arrow has been corrupted.
I'll tell you, one of the relationships that was always really cool in pre-52, and it would, and I almost hate to see them force it back into the new 52 stuff, is the Green Arrow Black Canary relationship.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I saw them together. I do miss that.
I don't know if this, I would even call it so much as a, go so far as to say it was a classic relationship.
I would think so.
Absolutely. I don't know if they could make it work post New 52.
No, they're totally different characters.
She's getting old and like experienced, and he's this, you know, pain in the ass Arrow.
Yeah, they're pretty much the age thing is they've been switched, but
that's true. That's true. She's a cougar now.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the hot young thing. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know if they could make it work, but
don't think so. No.
That's probably a good point. They did reverse the ages, didn't they? So.
Yep.
Interesting.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. So Black Canary is now up in space, looking down at Earth, and she realizes that Ollie is probably gone. And we get back to Turpin's narration, and he's like, he's tried to hold off for as long as he can, but he figures it's like trying to beat the ocean unconscious, and he can't do it any longer. The heroes are finding that the skies are still red, and the skies are like raining blood. And we get the characters, the folks from Apocalypse who are trying to turn Turpin into Darkseid. They are, you know, they're telling him, okay, give us a thumbs up for the triumph of the human spirit, or thumbs down for a day to summon the Holocaust that will never end. And they kind of put Darkseid's helmet on Turpin, and he's still trying to fight it, but in the end, he finally gives in, and he gives a great big thumbs down. Well, at the very end of the issue, he gives a thumbs down, and we see that Turpin has been completely subsumed, and he now looks exactly like Darkseid. He's given in. Now, throughout that scene happening, we get little moments of hope. We get Barry Allen and Iris meeting up, and she asks him everything's going to be all right, or she's telling him everything's going to be all right now because he's back, and he agrees, you bet. So we get that tiny little moment of hope, and we get the super young team showing up at one of the watchtowers, the one where... Mr. Terrific is stationed, one.
Checkmate Castle.
The Checkmate headquarters there. They show up, and it looks like things are going to be great. Mr. Miracle steps out. He's like, don't shoot me. I'm Mr. Miracle. I'm the super escape artist. We can save the world. And then he gets a bullet right through his chest. Lamo. So we get a moment of hope, and then we get this moment of death. Unless he, you know, pulls a miracle. And then we get to see... Turpin fall and become Darkseid, and he gives everyone a big thumbs down. Boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
And that's the end of issue 4.
I did not remember this issue at all.
No, me either.
Yeah, I remembered a lot of issue 4, but issue 3 was total new read to me this time. But reading them together, so far it's still holding together.
Yeah.
So far.
Holds together better this time around for me.
Yeah, it does.
There you go.
Because we've seen so much of the stuff that's worse, maybe.
No, since this then. Stuff holds together. You just, it's a... it's a deep, full story. Like, it's full. You gotta read it carefully. It maybe wasn't, like, putting it out in the summer and positioning it as one of their summer event comics was maybe not the way to go.
Yeah.
Because I think people expect something different when they're reading their big summer crossovers, but either way, so far so good.
Well, again, I go back to, you know, what I said, I think, before, the noting that, you know, Scott Coles, his introduction to DC Universe was Crisis on Infinite Earths. I still question the logic of giving that to someone as a first read into the DC Universe, but it certainly is much more accessible than this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
This is heavy continuity, and there's no freaking context for anything that you don't know.
Yeah, there's barely any at all. You're right.
You either know what's happening and who these people are, or you don't, and there is no in between. And there's very little in the way of expository moments, which is fine. I mean, I don't want someone to stop and do the little roll call moment, but it would be prudent every once in a while, or as I keep pushing, the recap page would be nice or something.
Yeah, I don't think I would have wanted to see editor boxes throughout this book, but like Robinson did with James Robinson did with his Cry for Justice, I would have liked to see maybe text pages at the back where Morrison or one of the editors had a page or two to just kind of, here's what I was thinking when I was writing this book, or here's some of the...
Well, he did some... I found an interview that Morrison did January, and it says Grant Morrison Final Crisis Exit Interview Part 1. And I haven't read it, but there looks like there's, you know, all kinds of stuff. That's the source that the Wikipedia was using for the reading order. So,
yeah, I would have liked to see some of that in the book. Like.
Yeah, and this was after the series was over, too. So. Anyway, go ahead.
And that's the kind of thing that pisses me off sometimes, is that the presumption that everyone's going to go straight to the internet. And it's for the most part, comic book readers will go to the internet, but if you want to broaden the audience, which they keep claiming they want to do, you shouldn't make it a necessity that people go to Wikipedia or DCpedia or whatever to understand what's going on. You should make it part and parcel of what they are purchasing at Barnes & Noble or your local comic book store or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And Morrison's smart enough to know, and we are in. I'm not living under a rock when I'm saying all this stuff, because I know that most people will have access to the internet, and most comic book readers today will, in fact, be internet savvy enough to go, Google this stuff. But if you really want to stand up to the claim that we are trying to broaden the audience, I'm irritating myself. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, and that was one of the thickest books I ever read. Especially when you're trying to reconcile some of that. So if you read everything like I did, it helped some, but made it worse at the same time.
But to Murray's point, this should not necessarily have been the big crossover event of the year, whatever year. What was this, 2008?
Yep. That is correct.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Yep.
Here's an interesting on the plus side, I've joined this a lot more than I anticipated, so... all of my griping and grumbling prior to us doing this is come to nothing.
No, yeah.
We still got three issues to go. That might be where the... There's still time.
Yeah.
It's still great.
No, I think it'll be okay.
No brains are leaking out of my ears at this point.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be fine.
Thanks.
Alrighty. I think we've done all we can with this. So
let's wrap this puppy up.
Wrap it up. As always, you can send emails at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. Let us know what you think of what we're doing. Tell us that we're crazy or give us something else that you'd like us to talk about. Or you can join us on the Facebook page. Just do a search for us, Tales from Longbox Podcast. You can't miss it. And as always, you can comment on the actual episodes. Oh, pardon me. Man, boy, when a yawn hits you, there's nothing you can do about it. And as always, am I missing anything? No, that's it. Yeah, we're done. Okay. Trying to get some sleep, people. I need some.
Go push some patches.
Oh, man, don't even get me started.
Okay.
God. 14, 14, you know.
I didn't, but anyhow. Yeah. Cool. Well, happy Sunday, guys.
Yes, happy Sunday. We'll see you next week.
Yep.
And we're out.
You betcha.